With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Dunzo. This is a podcast that explores hookups and breakups of famous lovers and friends, both real and fake, and all the discarded pop culture of yesteryear. I'm your host, Troy McEady. You guys, welcome back to whatever episode this is of Dunzo. It is me, Troy McEady. And this is really, I'm excited for this because I've never done this before. First of all, I'm joined by royalty. I'm joined by Dunzo / Smushroom, a Smushroom royal. You guys, Russ Martin is here and I'm so excited. Russ, how are you?
Troy, I'm fantastic. It is so nice to be back. It's been a little minute. It's been a minute since I've heard the words the Smush Room. How about that? Do you have any idea how many episodes of Dunzo you have done since RIP the Smush Room?
I honestly don't know, and I feel like I don't need to know. It's none of my business.
That's a good point. Yeah, I agree.
It's none of my business. How have you been? How is life?
Life is fantastic. I just started teaching at the university that I went to undergraduate at. So yeah. That means that I'm real old.
That's so cool though. Do you love it though?
So far, so good. I am really liking it. I'm teaching journalism, but I've backdoored in teaching popular culture. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Makes sense. I feel like whatever you're doing, you'll backdoor in teaching popular culture. Like no matter what your career is.
I was like, so who here likes sports? I'll talk about Simone Biles and her celebrity.
Yeah. You're like, I know a thing or two about food.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm just like podcasting and living. I'm kind of podcasting full time now a little bit.
I love it so much. Congratulations on your new show and all of its smashing success. I love it so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's fun. I'm obsessed with Kelly. Now she's like, I've like ushered Kelly into my life as like a mother figure, which is like what I do to every strong woman in my life. So now I'm being swaddled by Kelly once a week and it's like real good.
Beautiful. Yeah, I have to say that it changes every celebrity piece of news that pops up because I have this instinct now to be like, someone's really going on.
Right. It's like, who are you really though, girl? Who are you?
Yeah, no, it's a whole new celebrity worldview. I'm sure you listen to Who Weekly, which is one of the biggest podcasts in the celebrity space. And Who Weekly sort of introduced a new lexicon of celebrity. And I think that you're starting to do that a little bit with Beyond the Blinds. And
thanks. That's a big compliment.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It is the dark underbelly. And I love to decide what I want to believe, how far into the rabbit hole I want to jump with you. And that's really the fun. Do I want to climb out or do I want to get all the way down to the gutter?
Yeah. Do you want to fully swallow the red pill or not really commit? You know what I mean? Or just put it under your tongue and pretend you swallowed it. So today, Russ and I are doing something really fun. I've never done this before. And I'm going to give full praise to Russ because this was your idea. We are going to be talking about the 2001 Video Music Awards today. And I have not watched this since it aired. Like I've only seen in the past 20 years, I've only seen clips of it. And it's also the anniversary of this award show just happened. And this was like right before September 11th. It just feels really, it feels like the right time to talk about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And Troy, I do have to correct you. This was your idea that I reminded you of.
Oh, was it? Was it really?
For those who don't know, I'm Troy's momager and Troy and I bat around ideas and I bring Troy ideas and we workshop through things. And sometimes I remember Troy's great ideas that he has had and I sell them back to him and invite myself on as a guest.
That is so funny. I really honestly don't remember. But yeah, Russ truly is my Kris Jenner, like for real. like, as I'm doing my Playboy shoot with my ass lubed up, he's like taking the pictures behind me.
You brought up something incredibly interesting. Let's start with the date of this award show being the last hurrah of a certain end of the 90s bleeding into the 2000s boy band girl pop 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 moment,
right?
And just 5 days before September 11th blows my fucking mind.
It's so insane to think, like, you're watching people who don't know that their entire landscape is about to change.
Yeah.
And they're like promoting, I mean, like, people are promoting their albums, like Jay-Z's like, my album comes out September 11th. Like, they have no idea that, like, nothing you're doing right now actually really matters, really, unless your name is Britney Jean Spears. Nobody's gonna, like, remember that your album came out on September 11th, Jay-Z.
Troy, did you watch the commercials for the show?
Every single one of them.
So the most important one was obviously the commercial for Mariah Carey's Glitter coming out on September 11th. I was like, oh God.
I know. Okay. I know. It was like stepping out of a time machine in a good way, and in some ways in like a really weird, like, what are we talking about? Like, I don't know what you thought about Jamie Foxx's hosting of this award show, but like, holy shit.
Well, let's get into Jamie Foxx, the pre-Katie Holmes Jamie Foxx. Totally different celebrity in my brain.
Oh my God. Yeah, so Jamie Foxx was the host of this award show, which I honestly had no recollection of. I didn't remember who hosted this at all. Like I said, I have like two or three memories of this award show. And his opening was fucking brutal.
It was Neil Patrick Harris, the house down boots.
Yeah. I was like, what the fuck? It was like a weird like opera number that went on too long.
Way too long. It was a full song and dance, like Coat and Tails, throwback moment.
Yeah, Coat and Tails.
Yeah. At one point there was a like larger Viking woman who was doing something strange with him.
Yeah.
It was uncomfortable. Overall, I would say that his jokes really didn't land in a deeply uncomfortable way. Comedy is of the moment, so maybe that's part of it.
Right.
Like, maybe there were for sure a couple contextual things that I didn't really get in terms of the bits, because I think the reference was lost.
Right.
Will Ferrell at one point climbs up something, and is that a reference to a Rage Against the Machine moment?
Yeah, it was supposed to be. I was like, but nobody's laughing. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's like, you look back at these award shows, especially now, and all we do is compare them to, you know, their better years, right? Everybody's like, oh, the VMAs aren't what they used to be. And I was watching this thinking like, yeah, they're definitely not what they used to be. But I don't know if this is what I thought they were.
Yeah, there's definitely less stentory. And I think that the VMAs could use some more stentory. I feel like maybe we haven't had a VMA stunt since What's Good, Miley?
Yeah.
Maybe that was the last one.
Yeah.
So there's less like talkable moments. Like, no one's really talking about anything that happened at the 2021 VMAs on Sunday.
Yeah, no. Aside from like, you know, the following day, like after the next day, it's like, it's as if it didn't happen.
Correct. Yeah. And it, like, no memes or anything even left on. The Met Gala just really took the wind out of the sails.
Yeah. And I will say, I think this is probably like a post-COVID thing, but like, I was watching this thinking, wow, like award shows used to be way more dependent on the host. Like,
correct.
It was really the award show was as good as its host, and it was really the host's job to like move things forward, you know, like progress things, like it felt like Jamie Foxx was just kind of coming out and doing these like stale bits that weren't landing, and it was like making everybody uncomfortable, and then he would just leave.
And at the time, and up until quite recently, we as a culture needed every award show to open with like a solid 15-minute set from a comic, which is bizarre. And in recent years, that opening spot has been used for a pop star to do something big.
Yeah, it's true.
the debut performance of a single or a new piece of music. There has been a lot of big opening performances. Taylor did it 1 year, Gaga did it 1 year. And I would much rather open with something big like that than an uncomfortable comedic styling.
Yeah, where they're just like roasting the celebrities because they think that we as the people want to see celebrities like be uncomfortable. And it's like, I don't, not really. Like, he made a joke. I wrote down some of the stuff that he said. He opened with this really cringy monologue about, like, I don't even know like the base of what it was about because it was so all over the place. But he made a joke about the Backstreet Boys like versus NSYNC, and he joked about AJ's sobriety, like kind of a lot. It was like really. It was like not funny and just brutal.
Okay. And I wrote down to ask you about this. So the Backstreet Boys make an appearance, and then when they're leaving, does Jamie Foxx open a bottle of champagne and offer it to AJ? Is that what my eyes saw?
That's what you're... Okay, so he made a joke that he was going to nickname AJ McLean Long Island Iced Tea. Nobody laughed. And then he was like... He said something about, he also made this really homophobic joke about Eminem and Elton John, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Then when his monologue was over, he like popped a bottle of champagne and offered AJ a glass of champagne. And then the Backstreet Boys ended up presenting the hip hop award, the first award of the night. And AJ made it a point to be like, by the way, I'm 90 days sober. And it's really hard. And like, if I can do it, you can do it. It was just like, this is how the show's opening. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a lot.
There were some weird moments. I've got to say, my favorite part of the opening comedy segment, there's this really cringe joke that he makes about Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. And Bill Clinton being surrounded by hoes in different area codes, mm-hmm. and pace him into this beach scene with ladies in bikinis. And then they do a cutaway to Susan Sarandon and three of her children who are just laughing their bloody faces off at this hoe joke. And her kids, like, two of them are young.
Like, you get that a little bit too much. Like, you think you got the bit too much.
Yeah, and like Susan Sarandon, who went on to be like a Twitter warrior for justice, right. Just 2021, oh, Susan Sarandon would take 2001 Susan Sarandon to task and cancel her.
For sure. No, she would like, yeah, it was like really an overload of the senses almost. It was like visually a lot, and then what he was saying was fucking insane. I mentioned that he made a really homophobic joke about, because Elton John and Eminem had just performed together. And like, you know, that was like a late night bit when they were on stage together.
Yeah, for the Grammys.
Yeah, and he said Elton John and Slim Shady fell in love with the Grammys, and he's changing his name to Little Homo. And I was like, okay. And then he said, and then Slim is changing his name from Eminem to I'm In Him. And he held for a really long time for applause. And there's a really funny moment where Jessica and Ashley Simpson look at each other and they're just like sort of church giggling in their seat and like leaning back, like nobody knows what to do.
I just, in my heart of hearts, imagine Jessica leaning over and explaining to young Ashley, that's what dad does.
She's like, that's like daddy. That's like Paul.
Well, I did think though that you compared 2001 to 2021, and then you have a queer black man up on stage shaking his booty, doing his thing, and it is the most celebrated piece of the evening.
Right.
In so many ways, we have not come far at all, but
right.
In terms of gay representation in the media, queer people out there representing their own damsels. And
yeah,
it's wonderful.
You do sort of realize like how much the world has changed when you watch something like this in completion and not just like clips, like just the throwaway jokes that they make in between, even like in the commercials and stuff are fucking weird. Like everything is just a little weird. Yeah.
The Backstreet Boys, I wanted to ask, who was your favorite Backstreet Boy? Because I had a realization.
Oh, okay. I love Brian. And to be honest with you, because I have nothing to hide here on Dunzo Podcast, I liked Nick. Like, I liked Nick when I was younger, for sure. Especially when his voice changed. Anybody else? Or whatever.
I was also a Brian girl. And I was watching this. The Backstreet Boys come out on stage. Four of them look reasonably dressed for the period. Right. And Brian is dressed like a child going to a wedding in a suit that is two sizes too big. Did he always have Christian pastor energy?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's not great, Troy. I don't feel awesome about that.
No, he was wearing like, he looked like a little boy that put on his dad's suit and was like,
yeah,
clink, clink, clink. I'm coming out on stage like in suspenders. Yeah, I was, listen, I liked Nick. I loved Nick. I loved that middle part bowl cut. Like, oh, I loved it. I knew even back then he was toxic and I loved it. We got a really, really good tribute to Aaliyah because Aaliyah had just passed away.
Yeah.
That's also so crazy to think about because, you know, she's still so culturally relevant. And it was so weird to see them talk about her. Like, her brother had said something like, Timbaland had said something like, well, like, you'll live on forever through your music. And, like, what a loaded statement in 2021. Yeah. Like, that made me really super sad and super emotional. And, like, always, whenever I see Missy talk about Aaliyah, I get, like,
Missy was so big sister role when she was talking about it. That whole segment was really touching. And I just thought so much about the legacy that Aaliyah really left. And I was struck. I haven't recalled recently just how young Aaliyah was when she passed away. She was 22 years old.
I know, it's crazy.
And because I just watched the VMAs, I was like looking up for comparison. Normani's 25.
Yeah.
It's like, think
crazy.
Of where Normani is at by comparison in her career, right? And by that time, Aaliyah had such cultural resonance and had produced such massively successful and impactful music.
Yeah.
And yeah, just too bright for this world.
Yeah, it's weird when you think about the fact that she, honestly, at that point, she had carved out like a new genre. I mean, a new like kind of female pop star basically came through Aaliyah.
Yeah.
That we still see. I mean, there's still versions of, so many pop stars now are still just versions of Aaliyah repackaged.
Who do you think so?
I mean, I definitely think, listen, this is not a read, but like it's really hard to imagine Rihanna's career without Aaliyah. Like, sure. What the fuck would it even look like? What would Rihanna look like without Aaliyah if she didn't exist?
Yeah. I don't think that's a read at all.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think it's a compliment. Yeah.
So yeah, that was super sad. And also Janet started that tribute and Janet 2000 fucking one Janet wearing her little like page boy hat.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God.
In general, there was a lot of hat work. A lot of people were wearing hats. Yeah. J-Lo showed up wearing basically full resort wear to be inside a theater in New York. She had on a floppy hat. I had forgot that for a long period of time, Alicia Keys covered like 45% of her face with a hat at all times.
Can we talk about, okay, let's start with J-Lo because Jennifer was the first performance of the night.
Yes. Yeah. So, I have thoughts.
Okay. Listen, I will say Jennifer's come a very long way since 2001. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. It was giving pop stars. Who was going to be the next pop star on WB Fantasy? I mean, it was like amateur hour.
The segment really boldly starts with about a minute and a half of just dancing, no singing, which I think is incredibly bold for somebody who is famously not only not a singer, but has other people sing her song.
I know.
At the time, that was such a huge point of contention about the whole J-Lo project, that she wasn't singing, that you could hear Ashanti on her tracks.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're going to come out here and dance for a minute and a half before you hit a vocal?
Can we also talk about the intro of Ja Rule? We have to talk about the intro of Ja Rule.
Mm-hmm.
So J-Lo dances for a full minute. And like Russ said, she is fully wearing like Tommy Bahama resort. I mean, she is ready for like a lounge on a chair at the beach. Like, I don't have words to describe what the hell she was wearing. And she stands on stage and she's like, you hear, what the motherfucker name? And then J-Lo goes, I don't think they can hear you. And Ja Rule just over and over, they do it like 5 times. She's like, one more time, they didn't hear you in the back. And he's like, what the motherfucker? Does it like 8 times. And then finally J-Lo just starts singing. I mean, allegedly singing so fucking off key the whole time. It was so bad.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I had just thought, I think it was in the opening, like comedic portion, that there had been a joke at Mariah Carey's expense. And I was like, this is truly the worst timeline of Mariah.
Yes.
J-Lo is a VMA star. Oh. Mariah's the butt of a joke. And she's about to go through the worst release of her career.
You're so right. Yes. I thought that I wrote that down. But I remember it because Jamie Foxx said something like, oh, I did write it down. He said, he was like, you know, I just went to rehab. And he like waited for people to like wait for the punchline. But like nobody was into his jokes. And he's like, I just went to rehab. And he goes, it's not for alcohol or anything. I'm not an alcoholic. He goes, I went there to fuck Mariah. Huh? I was like, what? Like, is that a joke?
Not like great.
2001 standards?
I have a question.
Please.
For you. I wrote down the names of some folks. The show opened up with just a parade of stars, some still relevant today, some not. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone who really stood out to you as, holy shit, I forgot about that band or person even existing?
I would say probably when they said that Stained was performing, I was like, what? Who? What about you?
Dream.
Oh, Dream. Okay, yeah, they're very relevant to me in my life, unfortunately.
Yeah. I had not thought about Dream. And they also did a really weird thing where award shows will often pair up two people. And I don't know if this was a VMA trope or just this particular VMAs, but at one point they sent out 6 people to introduce a category. All 4 members of Dream, plus Jessica Simpson and someone else.
And Mandy Moore.
And Mandy Moore, yeah. I wrote down that it was 2001's Pop Beast team.
It was so awkward too, because like there were so many people on stage that they had to keep like adjusting to get to the mic to do their little bit, their like pre-written joke. Like it was so, I think that the joke they were doing was that they were young, because they were like, I remember when I was a little girl and Mariah Carey was famous. And then another one would be like, yeah, I remember being a kid and seeing Madonna's videos as a kid, because we're little. Like the whole bit was like, we're young girls.
Yeah. So many revelations for me. Forgetting how people were positioned in pop culture. Mm-hmm. Like, this was also the short window of time in which we all thought that Macy Gray was going to be an Alicia Keys-level star who stayed with us for decades forevermore.
Oh, my God. We were convinced that Macy Gray was going to be, like, that she was this, like, prodigy.
Yeah, like, we thought that Macy Gray was Tracy Chapman.
Yeah, literally. And we also, I mean, not to say that Alicia Keys isn't, like, extremely talented, but, like, the way she was spoken about when she first came out was that she was, like, this Mozart level Beethoven,
yes,
you know, like she is literally a black young Beethoven that came from like Hell's Kitchen or whatever the fuck Alicia Keys is from,
like, yeah, truly, Beethoven of the streets.
yeah, like she's this musical prodigy that is going to take over the world, which like, it's not like she didn't, but it's just like now she's Alicia Keys.
Yeah, she's her own thing. Alicia doesn't sell well, but she's got a great career. Like people think of her like as like a B-tier legend.
Totally, for sure. You're right.
Yeah.
And you're so right about the fact that this was before we had ever seen Alicia's like head.
Yeah.
Because Falling had just come out, and she even says when she wins her award for like best new artist or whatever, that she'd never like accepted an award before. Like she didn't know how to like stand in front of the podium. It was cute.
Yeah, she was very fresh faced and adorable, and I love Alicia Keys. I really like her.
I do too.
She hosted something. Did she host the BET Awards? No, Erykah Badu hosted the BET Awards recently, right?
No, but she did host something.
Was it the Grammys?
Maybe it was the Grammys.
Yeah. And I thought she did a good job. Yeah. I think she's cool. I like her a lot. There was also, this was the year of the Macy Gray dress. My album dropped September 18th.
Yes. Which is,
people thought that was so crass. Do you remember the backlash to that dress?
Yeah, it was major.
Yeah. It kind of flopped her.
It did. It did. Like, people were just, like, so put off by that. And the really funny thing is, whenever I look at that dress, my best friend at the time had her birthday party. Since I'm from Cleveland, we used to have our birthday parties at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like, every year. Because it was just, like, a thing to do that was close. And that dress was there that year. Like, she took it off and immediately gave it to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I'll never forget being like, holy shit, like, that's Macy Gray's promo dress.
Honestly, for all the listeners, I think that is an excellent 2021 Halloween costume for an elder millennial.
Oh my God, it's so good. Also, I just wanted to say, by the way, before we move on too much, like, you need to download Dream on your phone immediately.
Okay, listen, I listened to Dream back in the day, but... no offense to your stand-up, but they didn't exactly have a long-lasting impact on the culture.
Me and Diddy will be contacting your lawyers. Our people will be reaching out to your people for slander.
Okay, so I get some of those mixed up in my head. Dream was the second season of Making the Band after O-Town when Diddy took over? Is that right?
No, that's Danity Kane.
Danity Kane.
Dream is ironically... No, they were never on...
Oh.
They were ironically never on a reality show, which it seems like they would have been.
Yeah, it really does.
I know. No, so Danity Kane was making the band. Dream was just one of his failed attempts.
Okay. What was the Pop Stars band? Sugar Jones?
Pop Stars was O-Town.
No, O-Town was making the band.
Pop Stars, that was Eden's crush.
Eden's crush. What did I say? Sugar Jones? Sugar Jones is Popstar Canada, which nobody outside of Canada will
hear. I was
going
to say, I don't know what that is.
No, all of your Canadian listeners just started singing a song in their head.
No, yeah, Eden's crush was Popstars, which then turned into making the band, didn't it? I've done 20 episodes about this. You think I would know?
No. So ABC was making the band. And then I think that franchise got taken over by Diddy.
Right. Oh, yeah, because it was, oh, God, it was Lou Pearlman.
Correct.
Yes, duh. Oh, my God. Yes,
did O-Town.
It was O-Town.
So that was on ABC, but Popstars was on the WB, now CW.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And then when Diddy took Making the Band, it went to MTV.
Yes. Wow. That's right. Yeah. Because, non-teenagers watched the first season of Making the Band. It was positioned as a of-the-moment reality television show, a social experiment, as Big Brother was at the time. It was very that era. Yeah.
I love when reality shows used to position themselves as social experiments to seem more like Emmy-worthy.
Yeah, it was a docuseries of 1999.
Totally. I also wanted to talk about... we're just kind of like jumping all over the place, but as far as performances go, I actually really liked NSYNC's performance.
Okay, tell me why.
I thought it was like really, I didn't expect it to be so full high whore camp. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is literally, I always forget that NSYNC was like, in my, like view of NSYNC versus Backstreet Boys. It was like Backstreet Boys were like crooners and like they were more focused on like their voices. And like, of course there was a visual element to the Backstreet Boys, but they were more like, their focus was more on like their music, whereas NSYNC was, they were performers.
Yes. Like, yeah. No, that's actually, the word crooner is smart to use.
Yeah.
They were almost like branching into White Eyed Soul with some.
Yeah.
White Eyed Soul, Blue Eyed Soul.
Like, it's almost witch hag soul.
What's the one white people do?
You're like, it's Blair Witch Soul.
Yeah, they were definitely that. This was also a real time in which Backstreet Boys were on their way down and NSYNC were on their way up. And yeah. NSYNC were being replaced. NSYNC swept this award show.
Yeah.
They won a lot of major televised awards.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, I mean, I was honestly, looking back, I was like, oh yeah, I remember why I was an NSYNC head. Like, I remember why I preferred NSYNC over the Backstreet Boys, because they were such pop stars. Whereas, like you said, the Backstreet Boys were like, they wanted to be boys to men.
Oh yeah. Like, they wore oversized shirts and like, almost like silky TLC pants, and they stood by microphones and moved back and forth like they were doing an MTV Unplugged thing. And
leather coats.
NSYNC was really the Ritalin version of it for the younger kids.
Yeah, NSYNC is like in cow print chaps with nothing underneath.
Yeah.
Like, one of them has white braids. Like, they were just like full and like Euro trash pop stars, which was like so fun. But no, I really liked it. Like, it was just very, it was just like very, I don't know. The thing that I love about them is how European they are. You know what I mean? Like, they're like such Swedish pop stars, but in America.
Yeah, they're, especially in that performance, is a level of Eurovision camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're they're purposefully cheesy. And that's what the song's about. And Pop is a great song.
Oh,
it's
God.
So effing good.
It's so good, and it's so 2001 in the best way.
Yeah, and it's written about something. Like, most of their songs are written about nothing, but it takes its stake and starts talking about what else is going on in the music scene, and it has a point of view. It reminds me a little bit of, is it Stupid Girls by Pink?
Yeah.
In how it's calling out what's happening around in the industry. It's a very good song, I thought, so the performance itself is pop art inspired.
Right.
They're pulling in different tropes. They've got people fully painted in blue to look like Warholian figures.
Yeah.
It's silly, is what it is.
Yeah, it was so silly. That's the best way to describe it. It was just like, wow, they really don't take themselves seriously at all, while also being very serious. And it's funny because, you know, I've talked a lot on this podcast about like the influence of like Black music, obviously like Black producers, Black songwriters, Black choreographers, and their impact on our generation's pop music. And it's funny because NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys both are basically like doing Black pop music in their own way. Like, NSYNC's focus on dance and trying to basically be Michael Jackson is so apparent and so obvious. And then, yeah, of course, like I said, like, the Backstreet Boys just wanted to be boys to men.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. And I was like, oh, this is like when I didn't hate Justin. Like, that was a fun, you know, it was like a fun thing to remember. Like, when he was like charming still.
I did not find him charming, but I watched with 2021 glasses, and I'm like, oh, I always hated the kid.
I know.
Yeah. So they brought out Michael Jackson.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What the hell was, I mean, Michael was not sober, correct?
That was a rough point in the Michael Jackson timeline. And the show actually opens, one of the jokes is about Michael Jackson and children.
Yeah.
And they pan to everyone laughing. So we are looking at a cultural moment where everyone in the room knows to laugh at a Michael Jackson kid joke.
Yeah.
And then Justin Timberlake pulls him out from behind a curtain and he gets a standing ovation. And I was like, how is he both like icon and predator and...
I know. It's so 2001. And to think Janet was like sitting in the audience when... in the front row when Jamie made that joke. Like, it's just so awkward. Yeah. But yeah, they pull him out and he like... he just looks rickety. Like, he just looks like he...
like freak show white.
Yeah. Like, it's like, oh God, Michael looks really bad. Like, he looks like the parody version of himself.
Yeah.
And there was like a weird moment where at the end of him dancing, he had like immediately had to sit down.
Yeah.
Like, they put a chair on stage for him and he sat in it. It was like really fucking weird.
Yeah. The skin thing shocked me because I hadn't thought about it in a while, but like I'm looking at Troy right now, and like if you walked into a Sephora, like Troy would be a 7 and I would be a 3. Right. Michael Jackson would be a -5. He looked like a fucking ghost.
It's lucent, like he was glowing.
Yeah. I also weirdly in my head was like, I thought Michael Jackson was already dead by then.
I know, because it feels like it's been so long.
Yeah, I have a very clear memory of where I was when Michael Jackson died and exactly what it was. And it was five years after that.
Yeah. But
I was like, oh, wow, a timeline in which Michael Jackson is alive. Okay, all right.
Right.
Place.
And it's weird, too, like his influence is all over this award show, but he himself is like this like empty shell of a human being.
He's the Phantom of the Opera.
True, like genuinely, like a ghoul came out behind a smokescreen and span around, almost fell back, sat in a kitchen chair on stage, and then they like wheeled him off. So yeah, that was really weird. Jay-Z also performed H to the Izzo, and he promoed. And this, it's also weird to see Jay-Z. Like real Jay-Z and Beyonce, who's like in Destiny's Child at this award show and like not interacting or having anything to do with each other at all.
Yeah. And also them being like other celebrities. That's weird.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I want to talk about that for a second.
Yeah, please do.
Okay. Because you know, I always talk about how much I miss when Beyonce used to talk.
Uh-huh.
Like when she was a human person.
Yes.
I love Deity Beyonce, please don't, you know, don't slash my tires, but I just miss when she was like a human being. And, you know, she came out and did her little bit with Destiny's Child, and they were wearing like these matching denim, like really, really cute, like Tina Knowles.
You did not just describe them as cute.
Listen,
let the record show.
Listen, there is charm and whimsy in everything that Tina Knowles put needle to thread to, whatever.
You what she saying? Did was put scissor to cotton and create a fringe.
All right, wait, are you talking about the orange? Or
the orange. Fringe? Yeah, the orange. The denim are much better than the orange. There was an outfit change. And
yeah. There was an outfit change. Yeah, listen, what I'll say about Tina Knowles' fashions is that it's crazy that she could always take one concept and turn it into three different looks every single time. Do you know what I mean? It's like today we're doing black lace and like jewels. Tomorrow we're doing basketball clothes. And she just like turns them into like these three intense pieces.
I don't know. To me, it just looks like a 15 minute three model runway, project runway challenge.
How dare you?
I have always been just like very much so against Tina's fashion house. To the point where like Beyonce wore a Gareth Pugh piece in about 2008, I want to say, And Gareth Pugh, a British designer, was sort of the talk of London at the time. He put out this all white collection. It was very futuristic space, but club kid inspired.
Okay. Okay.
Do you remember the piece? It had like the, it had wide shoulders and it came in. It looked sort of like she was in a little white robot suit.
I don't remember that.
I'll send you a picture of it.
Okay.
But she, at that moment, I was like, well, I can respect her again.
Yeah, finally, she's back. But no, yeah, so Jay-Z was like full Jay-Z, and he performed H to the Izzo. And this was the last time I can remember really, I used to really like Jay-Z a lot when I was in like middle school, early high school. And this is the last time I can remember him having any sort of like real relevance in my life, mm-hmm. Like music wise. And this is when he was still like really cool.
Yeah.
One thing that I didn't, just because I stopped paying attention to him. One thing that I learned about him when I did that Beyonce and Jay-Z thing was that like he became very not cool. Like he became very like, you know, I release music through Samsung.
Yeah.
On, like, do you know what I mean? Like he became very sort of like try hard, whereas Beyonce was like skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. And this is when he was still like just really fucking cool.
Yeah, although he had a budget Harlem Globetrotters opening with some basketball players doing some pretty any front yard in America sort of tricks.
Yeah, he did. And he was wearing the biggest jean shorts I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
Ever in life.
Yeah. But weird to see them just down on the level of an everyday celebrity.
Yeah.
Because we have so accepted them as living gods.
Mm-hmm.
And they were at one point human celebrities.
Yeah. Just human breathing people with skin and all the things, you know?
Yeah. Can we talk a bit about 2001 fashion? And
a bit?
How it actually was versus how it is on TikTok today.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that. I want to talk about that because I'm like, oh, do you really love early 2000s fashion? Do you really? Because if you do, then please put on what Pink was wearing to accept her Lady Marmalade performance and go out in a day. Go out for a whole day. If you really love it as much as you claim to love it.
Describe Pink's outfit.
Okay, so she's wearing joggers. Mm-hmm. And they are not She by Sheree. I do not approve. They are just straight up fucking, it looked like Old Navy joggers. She's shoeless.
Yeah, and the joggers are capri length.
They are capri length. She's barefoot. She's wearing a mesh, like high-waisted bathing suit. And then on top of that, she is a turtleneck t-shirt, a custom turtleneck t-shirt that has been cut to frame the mesh.
Uh-huh.
A fedora, of course.
Everyone is wearing a hat in this entire room.
Yeah, nobody is hatless for sure. She looks fucking insane. Lil' Kim, first of all, Christina Aguilera has box braids. She's Moesha braids. Because it's Christina. She just fucking thinks that she can do whatever she wants.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So Christina's wearing box braids that are pink and blonde. Lil' Kim. Lil' Kim is untouchable. She could come out in a paper bag and I wouldn't care. But like her hair is, I don't know how to describe her hair. It's gonna take me a minute. You go, because it's gonna take me a minute to think about it.
What I noticed is that 2001 fashion is all about separates and accessories. Yeah. Nobody is wearing a head-to-toe look. Everyone looks like they've gone to the mall with $150 and purchased as many items as they possibly could on a shopping spree and thrown it all into the same look. Like, yeah. People are wearing six different pieces of fabric in, yep, six different arrangements on their body, and then they're wearing like eight different types of accessories. Everyone's, yeah, got on multiple rings, everyone's got on like bangles up to one side. Everyone has on some sort of like a clinky clanky belt.
Yeah.
There's like, there's a lot of buckles going on. There's just, there's, it's so much. It's very Claire's.
Well, the thing about it is that it's like cheap. Like it's, yeah. It's the true definition of like ghetto fab. Cause it's mm-hmm. like cheap as fuck, but it's like really expensive pieces. And a lot of it is like custom, which is like interesting. Like you look at a lot of the shit that people are wearing, like especially the shirts, they're all like custom cut, custom sewn, custom like bedazzled. They look, they're like pieces made for them.
Yeah, but they're like the most expensive possible version of something that you would get like somewhere between the Jersey Shore and like Sunset. Right.
Yeah, like they're really, really cheap looking.
Yeah.
Very like, inexpensive.
And very professional DIY.
Yeah. Which like, I will say, that's one of the things that I love about that time period. I do like okay. that.
Yeah.
I like the sort of patchiness of the early 2000s where it's like, it felt like every pop star, like everything that they wore always, like when you look at what Britney wore on like red carpets and even just like for photo shoots and stuff, it all looked so custom. Mm-hmm. It all looked like a stylist was like, we have these patches, we have these bolts, we have, you know, we have all this box of shit. Let's like turn this into something. And I like that.
Have you ever been to a Build-A-Bear in the mall?
Oh, yes.
The fashion of the time for celebrities was like a $10,000 package Build-A-Bear.
Totally. Like, it's true. It's like, it's really, it was really a lot.
Yeah. And
it's weird because it's like, you can look at what everybody's wearing and it's you can pick up on trends. Like I remember the trends. I know what they were, but you look at it and it's like, this is trendless. Yeah. Like we didn't know that we were living in like the second 80s. We didn't know that you could literally, there would be a time that would come soon after where you couldn't just wear anything that you could ever imagine wearing. Yeah. Like there were no boundaries or rules really to anything. And like that part of it is like fun, you know?
Yeah. The fashion was more surprising too now. Celebrities yeah. play it safe a whole lot more now.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Met Gala was a testament to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Were there any songs that you caught yourself singing along to where you're like, I have not heard this in time?
I'm trying to think. I mean, I was like rapping H of the Izzo, which is gross. I actually might even cut that out. not really, to be honest with you, because this is my iPod.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean?
You as, live in 2001. Yeah.
As Nene Leakes would say, I can listen to that on an iPod. What about you?
You obviously watched Scream Queens, right?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember the woman who was played, Nassim?
Her?
Mm-hmm. Who was terminally stuck in like 1984.
Right.
It's kind of like Troy's still in 2001. It's a bit of a mental break, but that's where he is, you know?
It is. Like when you told me, I was like, Dream? That's all. He loves you, not?
a bob. Absolutely yeah. a bob. I won't argue. For me, it was City High, What Would You Do? I know every word to that song.
Oh my God. Yes, City High. Because what were they nominated for? Best hip hop?
Best hip hop, I think. Yeah. Yeah, best hip hop video.
Oh my God. Yes, City High. I was like, that's fun.
Yeah. City High, and I can just remember, so we're the same age.
Uh-huh.
In 2001, we would have been 13, right?
Yep.
And when I was 13, I so clearly remember Southern Manitoba, middle of the prairies, town of 2,500 people, my white ass, just late at night, being like listening to this song about an urban Black single mother and her struggle, and being like, I feel it!
Are you kidding? Every child listening to that song screams saying those lyrics. Especially, you know, like the rap part at the end where he like reiterates what she's been saying. And he's like, what would you do if your son was at home crying? You really like get into it because he's hungry. like that was like my part. It's like, baby, you're 13. What are you talking about?
Yeah, for sure. That and India Ari. India Ari. Why didn't we get more from her?
Oh my God, India Ari. Yeah, she was a, I feel like, a result of this weird time period where it was like, we wanted a bunch of versions of like Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
Like we were looking for the, basically, honestly, like the next like Lauryn.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was the Macy Gray Black Eyed Peas collab. Hey DJ.
Yes. Yes.
Or Mr. DJ or whatever. I was like, whoa. Oh my God. Hey DJ.
As many people forget, there was a time period in which the Black Eyed Peas thing was like cycling through interesting different front people.
Yep. Yep.
And yeah, I don't know. To me, there's no justice in the fact that Nicole Scherzinger never got her go around with the Black Eyed Peas as she was intended to.
That will haunt me until I'm dead. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. And bless Fergie. And I'm glad that the Black Eyed Peas were a root out of her horrendous drug addiction. Yeah. But I do think that we could have had some more versions of Black Eyed Peas with different folks at the front of it that popped.
Oh my God. With Nicole's voice.
Right.
And like her ability to actually like write music and stuff and not just be, I mean, yeah, agreed. Like I love Fergie, but like she's great. But like Nicole is like a real fucking talent. You know what I mean? Like she's like a real lightning in a bottle talent, like that we just don't appreciate or give a fuck about for whatever reason.
I think that Black Eyed Peas could still do it. Like imagine Tinashe.
Yeah.
With the Black Eyed Peas.
It's true.
Or like, let's give Normani a radio song.
Yes.
And let's blow Normani up using the vehicle of the Black Eyed Peas. You know what I'm saying?
RCA just heard that. They're going to contact you. I'm sorry. RCA is going to be reaching out to you. I do also want to, obviously we're going to end the episode by talking about Britney.
It's just Britney. Like the lead it's coming.
You know, yeah. Of course. Everybody's like, hi. but I also wanted to talk really quickly about Missy's performance.
Yeah.
I know we talked about her her tribute to Aaliyah, but I mean, the innovation. Like, I was like, oh, so like that's where Miley stole her entire fucking Bangers Tour concept from, was like Missy. Because she comes out and like, it's like this big like Legends of the Hidden Temple version. It's like this Mayan version of Missy's head, like a stone statue of her head. And the mouth is like opening and closing. While she's performing, she comes down from the ceiling on a chandelier. So fucking cool. Yeah. And then, like, partway through her performing, did she do Get Your Freak On? Is that what she was performing?
She did Get Your Freak On, the remix.
The remix version, which is so good. And then she just, because, you know, Missy, the thing that I think is missing from the music industry is somebody like Missy, who is not only, like, really innovative and talented and incredible, but loves to collaborate and put other people on a pedestal and like make other artists the best they could be and put people together in groups. Yeah. Like she really loved like showcasing talent.
Well, lest we forget the Lady Marmalade was a Missy project.
Totally.
Yeah.
Like she was just so, oh, we are so lucky that we got to experience like the peak of Missy's career. And so halfway through the performance, then the mouth of this like Missy head opens and the tongue comes out and Nelly Furtado comes out and she's like, I love me some Nelly Furtado.
Oh my God. They dropped her into that tongue straight from Canada, baby.
And then we see Ludacris comes out and Trina.
Yeah.
It was just so cool. It was so, and of course, Timbaland was on stage because duh, that goes without saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And Missy gets remembered as an innovator of beats, especially, and like production But also, what a wonderful visual artist.
Oh my God.
The tour visuals, the fashion, the videos. Missy really did the damn visuals, and not for nothing. She is a bigger, more masculine
yeah.
kind of a gal than anyone in the landscape.
Yeah.
Like, Missy did that and made that massively commercially successful in the, like, pre-Girls Gone Wild, everyone is wearing low-cut denim, and right. there are commercials where belly buttons sing era.
I'm coming out.
That commercial played. Top of mind.
It was so good. There's an episode of Switched on Pop where they talk about Missy. I don't forget what song they do specifically, but they mostly talk about Missy's career. And they mentioned that like, you know, when you look at Missy, first of all, people don't ever talk about the fact that she was like a lyricist. Like, that woman could write a fucking song. And she was like clever and funny and like a true wordsmith. Like, she would put shit together that would make you like think. And she has songs that people still fucking interpret now that they're like trying to figure out. But they talk specifically about the fact that she was, you know, like a bigger Black woman at the time who was like not really feminine, but she did unapologetically sing about sex and her body and orgasming, and she liked to dance. She was a good dancer. She never like...
She was a great dancer.
Yeah, like she just, oh my God, I get goosebumps even like seeing her. I'm just like, I love her so much. I'm always rooting for her.
Do you listen to the Pop Pantheon? It's sort of a new podcast.
I don't think so.
It's wonderful. It is taking the idea of fantasy sports and applying it to pop music. And
love that.
Every episode, they go through the career of a pop artist, mainly women, and they place them into a pantheon of tiers from like legend on down. I think the catchline for it is something like legends like Madonna to lesser legends like Nicole Schitzinger.
Oh my God, that's funny. That's amazing.
There's an excellent episode on Missy Elliott that anyone who's interested in all this stuff should go and listen to. And yeah, give that podcast some love. It's really good.
Oh my God, literally message that to me immediately. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I will.
Should we talk about Britney?
No, we're going to get to Britney.
Okay.
I have some pressing questions.
Ooh, first. Okay.
Why did people like Tenacious D?
Yeah, I don't know, honestly. I can't answer that one.
Okay, what about this one? Was it only me who had a sexual awakening seeing the torso of the lead singer of Incubus?
Yes. Actually, no, it wasn't only you, but it wasn't me.
Did you have tingly feelings as a young man that confused you when you saw the Robbie Williams video that was nominated in which he tears off his skin?
No, yes. Now that, on the other hand, yes, that was a real, like, I better stay up late and make sure that video comes back on again.
Yeah. Again, a brief period in time in which it seems like Robbie Williams could have been an American celebrity.
Totally.
Is it possible that the future baby daddy line that was delivered in 2021 from Megan Fox and Kourtney Kardashian was stolen from this very broadcast when Jamie Foxx says it about Mary J. Blige?
He didn't say that. It's 100%. And actually, I would like to get lawyers involved in that as well.
Okay, another quick, rapid question. Is there anything that we could have done after the release of Yellow for Coldplay not to have happened?
Oh, God. You know, Coldplay is so interesting because I was never a Coldplay girl, but I was surrounded by Coldplay girls.
Okay.
And they never came into my life, ever. So, like, even back then, like, looking at them, I'm like, I never got it.
Yeah, they were really positioned as indie at the time, which was interesting.
Right.
Another question. Why didn't we get a second song from the Moulin Rouge supergroup?
Because they were so close to fucking eating each other's throats out and killing each other. Okay. they couldn't, they, there's no way that Christina and Pink could have done it again.
Was culture at the time consumed by the glow up from Fresh Prince to the body oddy oddy that Will Smith showed off in this broadcast?
Okay. Will Smith showed up and said, "Hi, I'm a billion-dollar movie star."
Oh, ooh, he looked good.
Like, I'm a movie star. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like a traditional old school People magazine movie, like MGM fucking movie star. Like, holy fuck. He looked incredible. Oh my God.
He took off a jacket and was wearing basically like one of those workout gear shirts that like gym bros wear on Instagram. And you could see every vein and muscle. And Will Smith looked good.
Yeah.
Why as a culture did we ever accept Julia Stiles as a dancer?
I don't know. I was gonna ask you about that because I was like, what the fuck? Like when she came out and started doing interpretive dance, I was like, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I forgot Julia Stiles is up on stage dancing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
Oh God, what a weird time.
Did you notice the moment in which Lil' Kim misses her line and Christina pounces in and takes it?
No. Oh my God. Wait, which which line?
They were going, I think the four of them went out to introduce a performance or something. Oh. And you could see that Kim turns around and looks back, I think, at Maya. And Christina looks and you can see her eyes register, and then she looks at Kim and sees that Kim has turned around and she leans in and takes the line, and then Kim turns around and looks confused.
Oh my God. Yeah. They couldn't have done it twice. They were lucky to do it once and they barely got it done.
Yeah. And finally, as a Canadian who didn't watch actual MTV, I watched our knockoff Much Music. Who liked Carson Daly and why did he get to keep that job?
We all did, Russ, okay? We're all going to be DMU. The reason that we liked Carson is because he was so blank.
Yeah, he's most.
He's, for young kids, you can project a lot onto him. And none of us were ever able to figure out his true likes and dislikes. Okay. So it was like, I loved him because, I can tell you why I loved Carson, but I can't speak for everybody. I liked Carson because he would give the same amount of like grace and respect to O-Town as he would Linkin Park or whoever. Yeah, like he really, as far as like interviewing, like he didn't, he wasn't an asshole about the fact that he had to interview pop stars all the time. And I liked that.
Yeah, he was an old school broadcaster.
Yeah.
And he asked good questions. Okay, fine. He just is like
but no, like looking back, I mean, he's literally like, he's like a sim.
Yeah, like he definitely, if you pull that man's pants down, has like a Ken doll, just like smooth pouch.
Right. There's nothing sexless. Nothing interesting about him, and I was always so like put off by the amount of celebutant women that would sleep with him. I mean, he really got around, and I guess it's like he almost used to play the part of like the safe guy to hook up with. It's like, it's safe to just fuck Carson if there's nobody else here. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, I love it. It's all coming into focus. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Happy to clear those things up for you, especially Carson. I'm very defensive.
All right, now that you're all lubed up, let's move into the final performance of the night.
Okay. So watching this in context with the rest of the show was really wild.
Right.
Like, it really changed.
I'm sure you've watched this performance often.
Right.
Like, how often do you watch this performance?
Oof, I mean, like, it comes up on my feed so often, and it's rare that I'll scroll away from it. Like, it's, like, almost daily. I'll say that. It's almost daily. I don't type it in daily, but it's like, it like pops up in my life like on a daily basis. Sure.
So what changed with the context of the show and how you viewed it?
Well, I always view it as like, you know, obviously this was a really iconic performance, but I always viewed it as like all of the performances on the VMAs back in the day were iconic. And like, this is just how the show was. Like, the show was just better back in the day. And that's not the case. It made me appreciate her performance more. Because I was like, wow, like this in comparison to like the level of production, there's just a difference. You can just tell that there's a difference between people like her and NSYNC who are doing full on, they're basically doing tour performances at award shows that are like themed and thought out, and there's concepts and visuals, and it's just like really intense compared to Jay-Z, like you said earlier, who had the Harlem Globetrotter kids outside with him. Like, it was so, you know what I mean? It just made me appreciate it even more. And just, I was like, wow, this must have been, compared to what we just saw, this must have really
blown
people the fuck away. She brought a snake out on stage.
Yeah. Well, and when you open up, like, the snake is the moment, the imagery that lives on. But when you open up, she is standing in front of a tiger.
Right.
Yeah. Jay-Z sent out some kids to dribble.
Like, literally, he's not being sarcastic. That was the concept of his performance. Kids playing b-ball. I mean, just like, and also to think about the context of like where Britney was in her career at the time, and to see her looking like that was also really like, whoa, like, she's really sexy and she looks really mature. And nobody knew that song, so that's also fucking insane.
Yeah, so can you explain that? Because I went and looked it up. This is not only the debut performance of the song, am I understanding correctly that the song had not been released? No one had ever heard this music?
It was the premiere of the song worldwide.
Okay,
wow. So, like, that's fucking insane. And the lyrical content is also just, like, so... Like, it really, I can understand now why it was just so, I don't know. Like, I've been so inside baseball about it that now it's like, it just feels weird to watch it in this context with the whole show.
Yeah. And I can remember, like, this sounds like a ye olde days sort of a memory, but I remember newspapers the next day had the front page pictures of Britney Spears and a snake.
Yeah. It was like major world news.
Yeah.
And to think, like, a bunch of other people performed at this show that nobody knows about.
Yeah. Like, J-Lo danced for a minute and a half.
Like, she honestly could have gone out there and just stand there. And, like, it wouldn't have made any difference because nobody will ever remember that she performed. Because Britney came out with a fucking snake. It was just nuts. It was just fucking nuts. It was, like, so crazy to watch the whole thing and then see the buildup of this moment that is, like, still even today people are like trying to find a way to top or to solidify themselves as like I'm a VMA artist, like I'm a person who performs really good at the VMAs, you know?
Yeah.
Like Britney, I think, really carved out a space of like being a person who is known as somebody who will go to the VMAs and fucking kill it.
Yeah. I love to share celebrity conspiracy theories, not widespread ones, just ones that I come up with in my own brain. I will message Troy at 2 a.m. and be like, hey, I've got a new one. But watching this, I came up with a new one, a new like villain origin story for Justin Timberlake. So this entire night, Britney Spears is the girlfriend of Justin Timberlake. That's the framing of every shot. NSYNC wins 4 awards. Justin is front and center as the sort of speaker of the group. He opens up the number actually solo on stage before anyone else from NSYNC shows up.
Yeah.
It's really Justin and NSYNC's moment to shine. It's their, you know, the Backstreet Boys show up for the start of the show and introduce hip hop of all things. Mm-hmm. But then they're away, they're gone. They had another gig that night. They were playing an arena and they were nominated for a song that was like, pretty much forgettable, like the third single. And then NSYNC came in with this huge song. They had a giant conceptual performance. Mm-hmm. They won all of the awards. And Britney Spears is just by his side cheering him on.
Yeah.
It's Justin's big night. And then at the end of the night, Britney comes out.
Wow, you're so, oh my God.
And it doesn't matter. what happened to poor baby Justin Timberlake that whole night. That is Britney Spears' night.
That's crazy. You're so right. Because I never thought about it as Justin's. I mean, but it was like, this was Justin's award show.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And
she hadn't even really started promoting her album yet.
No. She hadn't done anything.
Yeah.
Like, I think they had just released the title.
Yeah, she was coming to perform a song that no one ever heard before.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be his victory lap.
God, that's crazy to think about. See, like, shit like that. Like, I never would have ever looked at it that way had we not watched this whole thing. Because I did not remember, obviously, that NSYNC had a big night, you know? But yeah, totally. And I also think, I want to say, I keep trying to remember who it was that I was recording with when we talked about this. I want to say it was Molly Lambert, and it was for the circus episode. But I think it was her that brought up the fact that, like, Justin, I think, was always, in a sense, jealous of the magnetism that Britney had on stage.
Yeah.
Especially when it came to dancing. There's an effortlessness to Britney's dancing that is, like, can't be taught. And Justin is obviously an incredible dancer. But as far as, like, sort of just dipping in and out, like, dipping in and out of, like, I like R&B, now I'm going to go full pop, now I'm going to do a little bit of rock, I'm going to go back full R&B, I'm doing a whole R&B album. And the way that Britney was able to do that and never really be questioned about it, because it all felt so natural to who she was, whereas with Justin, it felt like he was, like, pretending to be a bunch of different people. Yeah. I do think that there was always, like, a weird, like, jealousy between them, especially because they were, like, using Wade. And then can we just talk about the fact that, like, Britney and NSYNC were there with Wade, and Wade, you know, he choreographed both of those performances.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think, like, how involved and invested he was in their lives and in their careers. And then all of a sudden one day he was just gone because of the drama. Like, he was so impactful in her career.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are all behind the scenes people don't get the credit, but there are very specific eras, like I Stan Gaga, and there's the Lorianne Gibson era.
Yeah, totally.
And it's very specific. And it defined what Gaga was. To me, that early era Gaga is as much a mixture of the visions of Lorianne Gibson and Nicola Formichetti as it is Gaga, right? But only really hardcore folks know who a choreographer even is, you know?
That's such a perfect comparison. Because, like, Lorianne Gibson was Gaga at the beginning, honestly. She really, I mean, she created Gaga, basically. And yeah, that's right. That's how I feel about Wade, specifically Wade and Brian Friedman. I feel like the Britney that we know, the Britney, like the legacy artist Britney Spears, the one that we all remember, that's all Wade Robson and it's all Brian Friedman.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. But no, it was incredible. It was so fun to rewatch that and have seen the whole night and know, like, she didn't just kill it because it was a good performance. Like, she killed it in comparison to her peers. Like, she was performing at, like, a high octane level that just was not, we were not seeing otherwise. Like, you're not seeing that from J-Lo and Ja Rule. You just weren't. You know what I mean? Like, you weren't seeing it from Christina and fucking Fred Durst the year before. It just wasn't happening.
Yeah. No, she brought it and got 10s across the board.
Well, do you have any closing thoughts? Let me, like, look at my notes and see if I missed anything. Because we never have the opportunity.
No, there's nothing that I want to say other than, like, just free Britney, turn her Instagram back on.
We should do this again. Like, we should, like, do this again for another random award show.
Yeah, yeah, 20 years of VMAs.
Well, never run out of content.
We'll be caught up by next VMAs.
Right, totally. Well, Russell, tell people, first of all, thank you for doing this. Thank you for coming back on the show. I missed you so much. I can't even put into words. And, you know, this is just another episode added to our like 50 page chapter. But tell people where they can find you and things that you're doing on the internet.
Sure. Right now, all of my social media is locked down because I don't want my students to find me. If you're my student, you're listening to this. No, you're not.
Who, me?
But I do Twitch streaming with a drag queen named Bombay. We are about to end a show that we have had for the past year and start a new show. It is going to be me and Bombay playing friendship-based games to test out our friendship. Oh. That's going to be... Yeah, it's really sweet. I think the last Thursday of this month, September, is going to be our first one, and that is twitch.tv/speakeasychannel.
Fun! Yeah, everybody at Speakeasy is incredible.
Yeah, Troy has did a season of God Tier TV and was just so wonderful. It was amazing to have you on the channel.
It was so good. I like, now I'm like, I want to do something else with Kai, and we're going to figure it out because yeah. I have FOMO.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, you guys, I hope that you enjoyed this. We'll definitely do this again. Thank you for listening. Russ, I'm obsessed with you. I love you so much.
I love you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Dunzo. This podcast is a part of the Solid Listen Network. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. Also, be sure to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/solidlisten for exclusive content. You can follow me on Twitter at Troy McGee, and you can follow the podcast on all forms of social media at Dunzo Pod. That's D-U-N-Z-O. Thank you to executive producer Molly McAleer and coordinating producer Nicole Matthew.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.